I remember Hashem.
What? So well, obviously you have to remember Hashem, but also there's a lot of feedback from somebody who's on it. Yeah. So thank you. So the Ma'aril says therefore that you shouldn't be trying these various remedies that it mentions in the Gemara over here, because most of them are not going to work for one reason or another. Again, either because people's natures have changed, or because we don't know the exact ingredients or the exact steps or what have you. And then a person is going to end up making, and a person is going to end up thinking, well, if this doesn't work and the Gemara says it, then nothing else that it says in the Gemara is true either, Chas v'Shalom. So therefore, don't do it. There is one exception, which we're going to mention at the bottom of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, a case where a person has a bone stuck in their throat. That one you're allowed to do, because that one, the Ma'aril says, is still known to work. The Friedrich Rebbe, in fact, mentions in a Sicha that even in his time, they still used to do it, and they even used to teach that lachash to little kids to do when somebody, when a bone was stuck in somebody's throat. But other than that, all the other ones that we're talking about over here, we're learning them because they're part of the Gemara, and because they have deeper meanings, therefore, besides the simple meaning of a cure, but not because we actually can try them, and not because we actually try them and they actually work, because most of them nowadays don't. There's also the point, which we're going to talk further down on the Amud, about how anyway are we allowed to use these various kinds of supernatural or unnatural or whatever cures. Isn't it essentially a superstitious thing called Darchei HaMoedi? So we'll get to that further on, and we'll talk about various opinions of Rishonim on that subject, why these things, well, first of all, what the Gemara says, and then various opinions of Rishonim on the subject, what exactly is the definition of Darchei HaMoedi for that purpose. Okay. Anyway, so to start off, the Gemara says, again, bottom of Samach, last line of Samach Vav on the days, Omer Rav Huna, La'eshta Tilsa, what a person should do when they have a fever that comes back every 3 days. Or to be exact, actually, it actually translates Eshta over here, and before it's Shachefes, which is some kind of wasting disease. But Eshta means a fire, so maybe Rashi, in other words, understands it doesn't mean so much a fever, but rather it means some kind of disease that burns away the body. Whatever it is, anyway. Eshta Tilsa, so for the kind that comes back every 3 days, if, as we talked about yesterday, it's malaria, then you have a certain type where the fever spikes every 3 days. So you do it like this. Lysi Shiva Silvi Meshiva Dikli. You take seven small branches. Rashi says Anovim Ktanim, which would mean grapes, but I go to Bach, correct it, to Anovim Ktanim, small branches. Meshiva Dikli, from seven different palm trees. So one branch from each tree, Mavashas. Meshiva Tzivi Meshiva Kshuri, also seven pieces of wood from seven beams. Meshiva Siki Meshiva Kshuri, as well as seven nails or seven pegs from seven different bridges. Meshiva Ktimi Meshiva Tanuri, seven different handfuls of ashes from seven different ovens. Meshiva Asi Meshiva Sinri, seven handfuls or whatever of dirt from seven door sockets. In those times, doors were made in such a way you had the hinges were on top and on bottom. You'd have pegs on top and on bottom of the door, sort of like Lego doors. And the peg would go into a hole on the top of the top and on the bottom of the door frame. So you have on the bottom over there, you have the hole where the peg goes into. You could collect dirt from there. On the side of it, you bring from the Oruch, a different gear stand, different explanation, that it's not sinri, but sukri, which means kvarim. So seven handfuls of dirt from seven door sockets, or from seven kvarim, as the case may be. Meshiva kufri, meshiva arvi, then also seven pieces of tar from seven different ships, because they use tar to make ships waterproof, of the Shiva Buni Kamoni, as well as seven grains of kamoin, which is cumin, as a type of spice, or Rashi says another meaning of buni would mean handfuls, the Shiva Bini Medikna de Kalbasava, as well as seven hairs from the beard of an old dog, So you put all these things together. You put them all together in the hollow of the person's neck, like we said yesterday, right above their collarbone. And you tie them on using a loop made out of, using a loop of thread made out of hair. Okay, I mean, that's the Gemara is mentioning that. Again, we don't do that. We don't try that nowadays because it's not likely that it's going to work, especially because with the different gear stories over here, we can't be sure about the actual ingredients. Pesher Agadja goes through all of these systematically one by one, and he talks about each one, the Ruchnius, what it represents, and therefore what the cure represents. In this one, he says, if you have something that comes back every 3 days, in effect, it means that it takes time to recover each time after an attack of it. It means, in effect, that it represents, therefore, he says, this person, therefore, has no rest of Shabbos. He mistakenly thinks that Shabbos is all just about physical rest, and he doesn't realize that Shabbos is actually a time to improve in Ruchnius. So, therefore, so he takes all of these things, all these seven representing Shabbos, and to represent, and it goes down. He starts with pieces of wood from trees, and then going down a step to splinters of wood from beams, implying that if he's not going to be a tree that's going to produce fruit, then what's he in this world for? Maybe only at most to be a beam that holds up a house. Maybe not even that. Maybe only a bridge for people to get from point A to point B. Like people will take him, like people will use him to avoid the water. Like people will use him as an example to avoid. And maybe not even. Maybe then, wood eventually gets burnt up in an oven. Maybe eventually you have a grave, etc. So he goes through that, and then therefore the person has to realize that I need to make myself useful to Hashem in the world, not just that I'm in this world and in particular have Shabbos for my own physical pleasure. Okay, another one. What a person should do if they have a high fever. Eshta here again means fire. And smirta, Rashi says, choli shemachamemes v'kaidachas is a gulf, a sickness that heats up and burns the body. So the pashas here, we are talking about some kind of high fever. Anyway, lishkol sakina de kula kauzala, so Rav Yechanan says, what you do for that, the cure for that, you take a knife made all out of metal, v'lei v'lahecha de'ika bardina, go to a place where there's a thorn bush, v'likta be'nira barta, and go and tie a thread made out of a loop of hair onto the thorn bush. Or it says onto it, so maybe it means onto the thorn bush, maybe it means onto the knife, whatever it is. Yoimakama lichruk deporta, on the first day, what you do is, you cut a little bit you take the knife and cut a little bit and make a notch in the thorn bush, the lema, and then you say as follows, the pasuk you have in the Parashat Shmos, where Moshe is pasturing Yisrael's sheep, and then all of a sudden he sees a bush that's the famous burning bush. There's a Vayera Malach Hashem Elo, the Malach of Hashem appeared to him in a fire in the snare, and the snare wasn't burning. So that pasuk, in other words, represents how the snare was resilient and didn't burn from the fire. So therefore, that's part of the lachash that you're saying to get rid of this fever, that the person should be resilient to it and shouldn't be destroyed by it. The next day again he should make a little more of a notch or a little more of a cut in the thorn bush, the lema, and then say the next pasuk, Vayar Hashem Kisor, the lema, and say the next pasuk, Vayom Moshe Asur Nava Ere. Moshe says, let me turn aside and see this amazing thing. Why is the snare not burning? Again, which is a good simon for the person that the fire shouldn't burn him up. Lemachar, on the third day, Lechlo Fei Purta, then he should again make another cut in the thorn bush, the lema, and then say the next pasuk, Vayar Hashem Kisor Lewis, the lema, that Hashem saw that he had turned aside to see, and Hashem called out to him. And the word sor, the word kisor, that he turned aside, also represents the turning away. It represents that the illness should turn away and go away from the person. Omelet of Achabrid, Ravalet of Ashi, so Rav Acha asked Rav Ashi, why are you stopping over there though? The lema vayomer al tikrav haloyim the lema. Don't you want to also include the next pasuk where Hashem says to Moshe, don't come close over here? That would be part of a good simon also. That that would be part of a good simon also, that you're saying, in effect, you're also, by that, you're saying to the illness, don't come close to me, go away. So why are we stopping only after the third pasuk? Ella no. Rav Acha ben Rabba says the right way to do it is like this. The first day, yeah, you make the notch in the bush, and you say both. They say the first two pasukim. The malach appeared to him, and the snare wasn't burning. And Moshe saw that and said, "Why is the snare not burning?" So both of those represent that you're saying that just like this, why is the snare not burning? That it was resilient to the fire, so it's a tefillah that this person should be resilient to the fever and not be harmed by it, not be destroyed by it. Then on the second positive, the second day you say the positive that Hashem saw that he turned aside the sea, and the turning aside represents that the illness should turn aside and go away from him. And then on the third day, yes, you should say that last positive that Hashem said, don't come close over here, which represents that you're saying to the illness, don't come close and go away from the sick person. The chi possibly, then when the fever goes away, when the fever breaks, litate, he should bend down the thorn bush to the ground, vilipaski, and cut it off, it's close to the ground, vilemahochi, and he should say the following, hasne, thorn bush, it's not because you're higher than all the trees that Hashem made his Shechina rest on you. It's rather because you're lower than all the other trees that Hashem made his Shechina rest on you, which is one of the reasons why Hashem appeared to Moshe and the thorn bush is to represent the idea of humility. And then he continues, just as the fire saw Hanani Mishal Ba'azaya Ba'arikas Min Kadamoi, and it ran away from them, and it didn't burn them, came Tachamine Eshta L'Ploini Ba'Ploinis, so the fire should also see Ploini Ba'Ploinis. Again, as we said yesterday, whenever you're saying Halachash, or whenever you're saying Tfila for a Chola, you should always be mentioning, using the mother's name, and run away from him. So that's the lachash to get rid of. That's the lachash to get rid of the fever. Now, a number of the mafroshim talk about a problem over here. For example, Gilead Ashat over here refers to a couple of places where Tosfos discusses this question. There's a gemara elsewhere in Shavuot that says that you're not allowed to use divrei Torah as a refuah. So it's actually considered a type of nichush, and the Rambam in particular has very sharp words for people who do that, for people who whisper words of psukim over a sore or over an illness or whatever. He says basically you're taking the Torah of Hashem and you're turning it into just something of physical refuah, which is wrong to do that. So if that's the case, then how are we saying over here that you're saying psukim from Chumash as part of this cure? So there's a lot of different explanations. One of them is that there's a difference in this case of tachonis nefashis. A high fever like that can be very damaging or even kill a person. Another explanation the Meiri says is, and Meiri gives a couple of explanations, is that that's when you're using the psukim as the main part of the refuah. Over here, you're not. The main thing is you're making the notches in the thorn bush and eventually cutting it off and whatever, and the psukim are sort of an auxiliary thing to that. And then another explanation, he says that you're saying them as a tefillah to Hashem. You're saying that just like Hashem, you prevented the thorn bush from getting burnt up, so also you should prevent this person from getting harmed by the fever. Then you have another point. Marsha says that you're not allowed to use divrei Torah when you're using it to heal the body, but when you're using it to heal the neshama, and in this case, if the person realizes that the sickness is essentially that he has a problem with his neshama and that needs fixing, and therefore he realizes that the gashmiyistic sickness is just an outgrowth of that, so then he's allowed to. And in this case, he's using these psukim over here to remind himself of the importance of humility, of the importance of not being a baal gaiva, and that's actually why we're mentioning over here that Hashem rested on the snare.
So Kasher Agadah goes into greater detail about that. That we're talking about the person is Gaibadik, so therefore he needs to use a metal knife, where metal is a very heavy low down thing, so it represents the humility that a person has to feel from Yisod to offer. And then every day he has to practice getting more and more away from Gaiva. And eventually he mentions Hanani Mishal Vazaria, he mentions the snare, which itself is a symbol of humility, and he also mentions Hanani Mishal Vazaria, where they showed a lack of Gaiva in that, for example, often a person gets to be guided it by they eat good food and whatever, and with them it was that the other way around. They were offered all the good food in the Hamnesa's court and they refused it and instead ate beans and peas and things like that and seeds. So therefore they also represent a spirit of humility, which therefore in the course of that is part of what Hashem saved them from the fire, and therefore the person has to realize for himself that he needs to develop that midah as well. By the way, all of this is talking about that when you have the Isser is talking about when a person is using Psukim for Refuah. But there's also, for example, you're allowed to, obviously, and we do Mice and Maholyom, that we say Tillim for a person who's sick, because again, there you're not saying the Psukim themselves have an effect on the sick person. You're davening to Hashem that he should heal the sick person, that's fine. There's also you're allowed to say psukim it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to say psukim in order to prevent yourself from having problems in the first place. So like if you know you're getting into a dangerous situation, let's say, then you're allowed to say psukim to begin with, even where you say the same psukim as a lachash in order to ask that Hashem should prevent you from getting into that danger in the first place. Okay. Onward. The Gemara says, L'simta, if a person has a boil, shchin, Rashi says, Le'mahochi, he should say the following lachash for it. Baz, bazye, mas, masye, kas, kasye. These are, Rashi says, these are names of various malachim, and their names actually mean, bazye means they cut it open, they tear it open. Mas, masay means they melt it away. Has to say means they rub it away. Shaloi bar maloi. These are also names of malachim that are involved in healing shchin. Even malachi di shtalchu me'ara di sdoim. These are the malachim who were sent from the country of sdoim, and they weren't actually sent from sdoim. Rashi says that's how the lachash is. The lachash doesn't always have to make sense. So these malachim were sent from the land of sdoim. Ulasta shchin of ki'ivin in order to heal painful shchin. Again, these are not necessarily meaningful words, but they're part of the lachash, and you say that in order to get rid of the shchin. Pesher Agadah talks about that shchin is related to negoyim, is related to tzaras, which in turn we know one of the things that causes tzaras and other such things is Lashon Hara, and in general Averis Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which of course was the problem in Sdoim. So therefore we actually say in this lachash that these malachim were sent from the land of Sdoim. In other words, the person should realize that maybe I have too much of the midah of Sdoim, and I need to work on correcting that and ripping that up and melting it away and so forth. Actually, we didn't finish the lachash. Baz bezich, baz bezich, matma, kamen, kamech. Einich bich, einich bich. Your eyes should be on you. Your eyes should be on you. Asrich bach. Your plate. In other words, einich actually doesn't mean your eye. Einich means your color. Your color should stay in it. In other words, the color shouldn't get redder. It's part of the lachash. Asrich bich. Your plate should remain in you. In other words, that the boil shouldn't get bigger. Zarech to color. Your descendants should be like a kolot, which is an animal that is infertile. Rashi explains that the zera is kolot; it gets held up inside the animal and it stays inside the animal and is unable to come out. So, in other words, it's infertile. Or kapirda, or like a mule, to like part of a rabia, which doesn't increase or multiply. Kach like tirva. So also Yushin should not increase or multiply in the body of Pliny by Pliny. So that's the lachash. So again, on the surface, it's just a meaningless lachash. But as I said, Tesher Agadda finds a deeper meaning in it. But the person has to realize that he may have a certain midah of problems with his relationship. Bein Adam L'Chaveroi, like the people of Sodom famously did, and therefore he has to work on correcting that and then saying to himself that I'm not going to allow that to spread and I'm not going to allow that to take me over, etc.
Okay.
Next, L'Kippah. What should a person do for a kippah? Which Rashi says two explanations. One is that it means pimples or boils, in which case it's similar to the simta before. The other explanation Rashi says is it means a person shekifehu shei, meaning that he has epilepsy. Anyway, so what should he say? What's the lachash to say for that? Leimahachi should say as follows: cheret shlofa, a drawn sword, the kela natusha, and a ready to use sling stone. Loishme yoichav cholin machivim. Its name is not yoichav painful sicknesses, and that's lachash to get rid of these boils or of these pimples or whatever or of the epilepsy. Peshur Agadda talks about then that we're talking about a person. We're talking again that if we say it's boils, then it's similar to the thing previously about the simta that he realizes that he realizes he should realize that he's the kind of person. His midas with other people are so bad that even towards his close family, like the ones who he might be at a sword's length or bow's length from, a sling's length from, he's not acting properly towards them, and he needs to correct that. Or if we say that it means epilepsy, kaifeu shed, that a shed, so to speak, forces him to do such and such, then it represents a person who's so stingy with his money that it's as if like a shed is preventing him from using it. So therefore, he uses the slachash to get rid of that and to realize that he has to correct that and make himself independent of that internal shed that's preventing him from doing what he should, from doing tzedakah and whatever else he should with his money. Next, l'shida le'maha. See, if a person is being attacked by a shed, so before a kippah, the second explanation was kefeu shed, that the shed specifically is causing him an epileptic fit. Seizures. Here we're talking about more generally that a person is being threatened or scared or whatever by a shed. Lema ha, he should say as follows: Havis depokit havis. You were stopped up. You were lita tovur meshumas. Cursed, broken, and in shamta should be bar shamta as a form of cherem. Bar tit the shed who is the son of mud, Bar Tome, the son of the Tome one, Bar Tina, the son of mortar, Kishamgaz Marigaz the Istamoi, like Shamgaz Marigaz and Istamoi, and there's the lachash to get rid of the shed who's causing him trouble. Peshur Agadda talks about that here. What it might be is you find in general, we know throughout Shas, that Shadim often tend to hang out in deserts and other uncultivated and abandoned and desolate areas. So therefore, it represents a person maybe who before we had the person who's too much of a Lagaiva. Here you can have the other way around. You can have a person who thinks too lowly of himself, who thinks that he's empty and nothing, and therefore is allowing himself to become depressed. Or he has a lack of emunah and Hashem. So therefore you mention the various names of the shed. And you have to curse him out and then forcefully throw him out and then realize that you can't live this way and you have to have a certain self confidence and a certain to realize I'm a Jew and I'm proud, as the line in the song goes, and to have betachan and Hashem. Next, l'shida de beis hakiseh, for a shed that is in the beis hakiseh, and we talked about it, and we learned in brachas, for example, that again a beis hakiseh being sometimes people go there, but not necessarily very much. Therefore, shadim tend to hang out over there. So if you have a person who's been attacked by a shed from the Beit HaKiseh, Leimahoch, you should say as follows, Kautafi Da'avi, on the head of a male lion, Ba'usi Jiguryosa, and on the nose of a female lion, Ashkachbim, Shidoi, Ba'ushirika Panda, I found Shidoi, the son of Shirika Panda, the Meshra de Kauti Chavde, I knocked him down in a field or in a plot of land where they grow leeks, the lawyer de Hamre Chapaute, and I beat him with the jawbone of a donkey. And that's the lachash to get rid of the shed of the Beit HaKiseh. Pesher Agatha talked about that there you might have an even worse case. Before we had the case of the previous one where the person thinks of himself as a nothing, here he thinks like all he is like the filth of the Beit HaKiseh. There's no kedusha in it. There's no kedusha in him at all. And of course, this is the Yetzer Hara tactic. So therefore, you remind him that you remind yourself that look, you know, the Jewish people are compared to a lion. The Tumah wants to control the head of the male lion and the nose of the female lion, but you want to make me think of myself as a filth of the Beit HaKiseh. Just the other way around. We're a great Jewish people. We bring sweet smelling Torah to Hashem, and we should serve Hashem b'simcha. And he wants this shed and this Yetzer Hara wants to make it that I have nothing, but as if like I have no weapons. Fine, I'm going to deal with him like Shimshon dealt with the Plishtim, where he beat them and killed 1,000 of them with a jawbone of a mule. So he says that's the deeper meaning behind this. Okay. Now getting back to, we said in the Mishnah, Uvnei Malachim Bazgogin, so this was all a digression, because again, we had mentioned the Mishnah about boys wearing kshorim, where they wear these things in order to keep themselves from missing their father too much. By the way, I forgot to mention yesterday in connection with the kshorim, so we asked the question in the Gemara, why are we mentioning specifically boys? And the answer is, Rashi says over there, because boys tend to be more emotionally attached to their father, girls less so. So if the father is away for a long period of time, a girl is much less likely to sink into depression because he's away or because he's passed away or whatever. As we discussed, the boy is much more likely, therefore they need to chart him for the boys. So again, because of that got us into this whole discussion of these various kinds of supernatural cures. Now we're getting back to the Mishnah. We said of Nei Malachim Bazogin, we said that king's children, princes, are allowed to go out on Shabbos with bells attached to their garments. And as long as the bells don't have clappers, because you're not allowed to ring bells on Shabbos. And we said that actually anybody is allowed to do that, except that Dibru Chachamim Behoiva, the Chachamim talk about the most common cases. So the question is, Man Tana, which Tana is it that allows anybody to wear bells? Just because king's sons wear it, okay, but other people don't usually wear it. Isn't there a concern that people are going to make fun of him, and he's going to take it off, or carry it in Shusar Abim, or that he himself is going to take him off to show off to his friends? Now Rashi, again, we've learned a few times in the Perek that Rashi holds that all the dinim we talked about in our Perek, where there's a concern that a person may take off their jewelry and show them, Rashi learns that applies equally to men and women. So Rashi goes, well, she tells there over here that a boy might also be prone to taking off and showing them off, and therefore there's a problem that he might do that. So it's one thing with a prince, since he regularly wears them, he's not going to do that, but everybody else, isn't there that problem? Tosfos, he said, learns that not, that the whole problem with taking off jewelry or accessories or whatever and showing them off is only with women, because he said that they're shachfanias, they're prouder of their accessories or whatever. So therefore, Tosfos learns over here that we're only talking that the problem is that people might make fun of them, and they're going to take them off, or
Tosfos also mentions, now you do have another concern, maybe, which is that they might fall off and he might carry them. So therefore, Tosfos says, though, okay, here we can be talking about where they're actually attached to a chain. So therefore, they're not gonna fall off. Anyway, the question is, again, that you have these various considerations why non-princes should not be wearing bells on their clothing on Shabbos, because they may make fun of them and they're going to carry it, or because it may fall off and they're going to carry it, or because they may take them off to show off, according to Rashi. So why are we allowing it for everybody else? Amar Rav Oshia Rav Shimon. He said, Rav Oshia says, because that would be according to Rav Shimon. The Amar Kol Yisro, B'nei Melachim Hem. Rav Shimon says, very appropriate today for Lag BaOmer, that Rav Shimon says, Kol Yisro, B'nei Melachim Hem. All Jewish people are considered princes. This is later on in the Masechta. You have a din over there about using a certain kind of oil for a person to smear on his body, which is with a rose oil, where we say over there that usually only kings and princes use it, and therefore for a regular person to use it on Shabbos would be demonstrating that they're doing it for the poor. But Rav Shimon disagrees with that, and says that Kol Yisro B'nei Melachim, and once princes and kings are allowed to use it, then anybody is. So the same thing over here, poor people can wear bells as well, and there's no problem with it. Okay, Tosfos says actually that what you would have to, Tosfos brings a possibility that in fact you would have to have over here, when we're being masculine, it would be for kids, because okay, if it ends up that they carry, look, I mean, kids are not chayev in the mitzvahs of Shabbos on a daraisa level anyway, so therefore it's not as bad, as opposed to with adults, then you need something more than that. So therefore, Rava gives the second answer, but Orig B'Ksus is a Divrei Hachol. You don't have to say that. You could say that the bells are actually sewn onto his clothing, and therefore everybody would agree that if they're sewn on, then there's no problem, because now you don't have any of those issues. If it's sewn on, he's not going to take them off if people make fun of him. They're not going to fall off because they're sewn on. He's not going to take them off to show them off to his friends, because he can't, because they're sewn on. So again, Tosfos says that maybe for an adult you would require in any case that they're sewn on, and only for children maybe, according to Rav Shimon, would we not require that. Okay. Continuing on the topic of things that a person is allowed to wear on Shabbos, so all of these things that we're going to mention now are going to be things that have a segula. All of them are going to be things, most of them are going to be things that are not natural cures, but supernatural ones, but you're allowed to wear them on Shabbos because, again, they have healing properties, and therefore they're considered a tashit. So the Mishnah says, Yotzim bebeisas acharvo, you're allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing an egg of a chargo of a type of locust. So you take the egg of the locust and a person hangs it on his ear, as we're going to say in the Gemara. Why? So you're allowed to go out on Shabbos with that. Over Shein Shul, you're also allowed to go out on Shabbos with a tooth from a fox. And we'll see in the Gemara what the purpose, what the property of that is. Over Masmer Minasolu, or with a nail from a person who was hanged. So you have, in other words, we're talking about solu. Solu can mean crucified, like what the Romans used to do, where they nailed people to crosses. Or b'chlal, you had in various places, you had that if a person was killed by hanging or whatever, afterwards they would nail up their body as a while to warn people not to do whatever it is that they did. And therefore, so we're saying a nail from that has certain healing properties, as we're going to see, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Mishum Rafua, all of these things are Rafua, and therefore they're considered a tashit. Divir Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. The Chachamim say, forget about on Shabbos that it would be carrying. Even on weekdays, you're not allowed to wear these things because it's Darkei HaMori, because it's superstitious ways of the Goyim, and the Torah says you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to follow in the ways of the Goyim. A different gear set brings on the side over here is that Rav Yossi is master it and Rav Meir asks it, which of course is very relevant, because if we say the Chachamim asked it, then the halacha ought to be like the Chachamim. But if we say that Rav Yossi is the one, if we say the mayor asks it, and Rav Yossi is the one who's matu, well, as we said yesterday, the halacha is usually like Rav Yossi against Rav Meir. So we'll see in a minute. The first Gemara deals with what are the properties of each of these things. Yossi in the base of a chargol, why would a person go out with an egg of a chargol locust? The avdi l'shichala, a person puts it on where they have an earache. So this egg has the supernatural property of causing healing the earache. The Rambam seems to have a different explanation of it. In Tirush HaMishnayos, he says that basically when a person's nerves or whatever in his thighs are weak, then it helps with that. Uvashen shel shul, what is the tooth of the fox? What does that accomplish? The avdi l'shinta, they use that when a person is having problems with sleeping. Now, there can be two kinds of problems the person can have with sleeping. They can be sleeping too much or too little. So you have both kinds. If you have a person who sleeps too much, then you hang on it, then you have him hang on himself a tooth that was taken from a fox while it was alive, and it has the property of getting him to wake up. Lamanda loynoyim, and if you have a person who's not able to sleep properly, and you use a tooth from a dead fox that was taken from a dead fox for somebody who can't fall asleep. The Rashba has a long and very interesting tshuva about these various cures, about what exactly is, and the Rashba goes through systematically in this tshuva all the various places in the Gemara where we have these kinds of supernatural cures, including the sugya that we had before, and including our Mishnah, and including various other places where the Gemara gives these cures that seem to have no natural and no rational basis, and he discusses what exactly is mutter, what exactly is author. One thing he mentions is that the tooth of the fox, he says may not be totally a segula. He says that you have certain things that have natural properties, and therefore a tooth of a fox can have the natural property, actually, he says, that it can help a person who has problems with sleep, as opposed to many of the other things that we're mentioning over here, where the properties of them are only supernatural. Which the next one, for example, of a maslim in Asolov, we said a person might wear on Shabbos, or on weekdays for that matter, a nail taken from a person whose body was hung up. And the reason would be the avdi l'zirpa. They do that when a person has an infection. In fact, Rashi mentions that in that case, what you end up with is it's sort of more supernatural than usual. Usually iron is the worst thing for a person who has an infection. It's likely to make the infection worse. A person can get tetanus or whatever. And here we're saying the other way around, that you use this nail to cure the infection. And here the Rashba says also that obviously we're not talking about a natural property of the nail, because there's no reason why it would have that natural property, why Dafka a nail from a person who was hanged as opposed to anybody else. So therefore, necessarily here, we have to be talking about a tisgula. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah Mishumus for Divrei Rav Meir, we said that Rav Meir says, or we said Rav Meir allows all these things because you're doing them for Refuah, says Rav Meir, and the Chachamim said that not. So what's the halacha? Abaya and Rav, the Amit Abaya, both Abaya and Rav say, the rule is like this, kol davar sheyeshbei Mishum Refuah, anything that is being done, for anything that has a property of Refuah, then there's no problem of Darchei HaEmori in it. So what does that mean? Rashi explains that Yeshva Mishum Refuah means that you can see an actual effect of it. So for example, you have various kinds of medicines or various kinds of dressings or whatever that you put on wounds. As opposed to, Rashi says, the question the Gemara is going to ask in that case, then the implication seems to be that, for example, a lachash, like all the various lachshim that we mentioned before, there's not an obvious effect when you say the lachash, so maybe therefore that should be also, and the Gemara is going to question that on the basis of something that we find, in a braisa. So that's one explanation of what it means, kol davar sheyesh bei mishum refuah. A problem with that is that
What do you mean? We just had in the Gemara before a whole bunch of lachshim. Some of them Abaye himself quoted his mother saying. So there's many other explanations of rishonim. That the issur is when we say kol davar sheyesh ben mishum refuah is like this. To say a lachash, you're allowed to anyway. To say a lachash, you're allowed to. The Rosh says this, and it's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch. To say a lachash, you're allowed to, even if it's not for refuah, as long as you don't know that it doesn't work. If you know that a particular lachash doesn't work, then you're not allowed to do it. But other than that, you're allowed to say any lachashim you want, and there's no problem of Dauchei HaModi in it. But when it comes to meisim, then you have to distinguish between whether it's a meisa that is known to have healing properties or not. So that would be kol davar sheyesh ben mishum refuah. So when you have something that's being done for refuah, then even if it's a meisa, you're allowed to do it, and there's no problem of Dauchei HaModi in it. And then that's factor number one. And factor number two, if it's a lachash, then you're allowed to do it regardless. Then you have Rishonim talk about a difference between something that has a natural properties versus something supernatural. So therefore that would be a difference. But again, in that Shuva of the Dashba, he says, what are you talking about? I mean, some of the things we're mentioning over here, like this one about the nail from the person who was hanged. There's nothing natural in that. It's obviously something supernatural. So obviously that can't be the distinction. Rashi himself explains the Gemara in Cholin that briefly mentions this matter of Dauchei HaModi, and Rashi mentions over there that Yeshvei Mishum Refuah is where you're doing something right there by the wound or by the sickness or whatever. Davar She'ein Bei Mishum Refuah would be something where you do something further away, and it's supposed to have long distance effects. So that would be another explanation. So we have these various explanations of what exactly is and isn't allowed with Mishum Refuah. You have how much these things are effective is a whole nother machloikis. The Rambam actually says that all these things, anything that doesn't work is also because of Dauchei HaModi, because people have used, the Rambam describes, people have used these things to trick people into Avodah Zarah, that you do this and this and this unnatural or ridiculous thing or whatever, and it'll cure you, and once in a while it does have an effect, and therefore people then get people to follow them and do the same thing. Okay, so now we have to do this and this and this ritual to Avodah Zarah. So that's why the Rambam says that all these things that are considered Dauchei HaModi are also. And he says, so you have the ones that are mentioned over here that you're allowed to do. Because people do have a certain belief in them, and they do after all sometimes work. So you have one idea is the Meiri says that maybe a lot of them work more by the power of suggestion than anything else. But you have, we know even nowadays, doctors will tell you that, you know, if you believe that a certain thing will cure you, then to a certain extent that itself has an effect, the placebo effect. So that would be a possibility also. Anyway, so the question is, the Gemara says, "Ha ein ben mishum refuah, yesh ben mishum dauchei HaModi." So, what is the implication then? That if there's no refuah, again, if it's not a natural refuah, or if you're doing an actual ma'aseh rather than a lachash, or if you're doing it not for the purposes of refuah, etc., according to all these various explanations, are you implying that there is a problem of dauchei HaModi, and therefore you're not allowed to do it? V'altanya, we learn in a brisa. Elon Shemashir Peroisa, if you have a tree that the fruit is constantly falling off of it, so in other words, you have the fruit is getting too heavy and is getting too heavy too fast, and therefore it's falling off before it's fully ripe. So what do? What you do is you paint the tree with red paint, the toyanai bavonim, and you load up the trunk and the branches of the tree with stones, and that helps, and then that helps. And it's not considered Dauchei HaModi. Now, b'shleima toyanei ba'avonim. So I can understand the putting stones on top of it, that has a natural effect, because that way you're weakening the tree. Obviously, what happens is the tree has too much vitality, and therefore that's transferring to the fruit. Therefore, the fruit is growing too large, too fast,
and it's falling off. So therefore, I can understand why you're allowed to do that. El Sukra, the Sukra might refer covered, but what kind of refuah is there in, what kind of refuah is there in painting it with red paint? Lechora, that's not something, it's not something that you can say it has a natural effect. It's not something, okay, it's not something that you, that it's not something that you can point to and say the effect of painting it with red paint is that it's going to do such and such to the tree. So according to all the various explanations that we said before, it should be considered Darkei HaMori. So why are you allowed to do that? So evidently, it's not just when it's Mishum Refua. The answer is, the Gemara says, there is actually a purpose in it. The reason why you're allowed to paint it with red paint is because that way people will see the tree, red stands out, and they'll realize that this tree has a problem, and they will daven. They will daven to Hashem to cure this tree and to make it that it produces fruit normally. Kedatanya, like we learn in a Braisa about a Mitzvah, where the pasuk says the Tomei Yikra, the pasuk says the Tomei called out Tomei, meaning Sorich Lodia Sire Lerabim, meaning you have to call out Tomei, not just in order to keep people, away from him because he's Tomei, but also in order to inform people of his problem that he has Saras. So they will daven for him, the Lodia Sire Lerabim, to inform the Rabim of his trouble, and that way the Rabbim Yivakshu all of Rachmim, and that way the Rabbim will daven for Rachmim for him. So the same thing over here, when you put the red paint on the tree, it's not Darkei HaMori, even though it's true, it's not that the red paint itself has properties of curing the tree, and if it didn't, it would be Darkei HaMori, but it's actually because you're doing it in order to draw attention to the tree, so people will daven that it should, that it should be normal and do what trees are supposed to do and be able to produce good fruit. So such a thing is allowed. It's not a problem of Darkei HaMori. Okay, so far we have, in other words, a couple of criteria. So far we have, if you're doing it in the Shum Refua, meaning that it has a known natural explanation, then you're allowed to. If you're doing a Lachash, then you're allowed to. If you're doing it by the thing itself as opposed to further away, then it's allowed to. And you have, by the way, a point that Rishonin mentioned, by the way, which is when you get down to it, I mean, not all of the normal cures that we use nowadays either do we understand how they work. The fact of the matter is when we take nowadays, when the doctor tells us to take a certain medicine, most of us have no idea how it works. Sometimes you even have medicines where the doctors themselves don't know how they work, and still the fact is they do. So the same thing, when you're doing something, Mishum Refua, you're not doing, the point is also, the problem of doing something not Mishum Refua is because then you're like saying that what the Goyim do, the superstitions of the Goyim, are important things, they're valid things, and I respect them. Whereas when you're doing them Mishum Refua, you're not doing it because to show that they're valid and I respect them, you're doing them because they work. You're doing them because you need to be cured of an illness or something, and because ultimately, with any cure, you're not depending on the cure itself. You're depending on Hashem, and so it is also with these things. So Omer Ravina, says in this connection, Taman Talin and Kubsi Bedikla, which Tana do we follow when we hang a cluster of dates on a palm tree? Where you have the same thing, you have a palm tree that is not well, where the fruit is falling off before it's ripe, and they hang a cluster of dates on it to call attention to it. Kihai Tana, it's like the Tana of that Braisa that says that you're allowed to do that because that way you're calling attention to it, and people will daven that should stop. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Choni Tana b'perek amuroi kamedir chiyaba oven. A Tana who was teaching the Braises of the Perek of Emorim in front of Rav Chiya Ba'ovin. Now you have in Tesef, if you look in the back of the Gemara, if you look in the back of a large Gemara Shabbos, you'll find the Tesef over there. You have two entire prokim of the Tesef, Perek Zayin and Perek Ches, that talk about various things that are Darkei HaMori. So there was a Tana was teaching these Braises. It was teaching these braises in front of Rav Chiya Ba'ovin. Amalei, so Rav Chiya Ba'ovin tells him, kulu ispu mishum darkei hamori. All of those things that mentioned in those brayos are indeed a problem of darkei hamori, as we're going to go on discussing in the Gemara. So therefore, you're not allowed to do them. Levar mehani, with the exception of the following two that I'm going to tell you. There is actually a girsa of Rishonim. There is actually a girsa of some Rishonim that says that all of them are not darkei hamori, and in that case, that's going to be relevant to a couple of them that we're going to talk about later. In any case, Rav Chiya Oven tells him the following two are definitely not darkei hamori, and you're allowed to do them. Number one, mishi yesh le etzem begroinoi, a person who has a bone stuck in his throat, maybe me'oisa min. What he should do is take something of that same min, so a bone or something of the same species. Umaniach layakod kodei, put it on top of the person's head, v'lei mahochi, and say the following lachash. Chad chad nochis bola, one, it goes down, it's swallowed up. Bola nochis, chad chad, it's swallowed up and goes, and should go, it should be swallowed up and go down, one. And that, in Rav Shem Darkei Hamori, there's no problem of Darkei Hamori with it. But as we mentioned before, the Friedrich Rebbe mentions in a Sicha that in his time, they still used to teach this lachash even to children, because it's the one lachash of all the, and it's the one cure of all the ones mentioned here in the Gemara and in other places in Shas that is still known to work. And in fact, the Friedrich Rebbe says they would also, another detail that they would do with it, which is not mentioned in the Gemara over here, they would put a bowl on top of the person's head. Another one that Rav Chiya Ba'Avos is that Rav Chiya Ba'Oven says is mutter leidra. If you have a fish bone stuck in a person's throat, lemahach, he should say the following lachash: nin alter kamacha, you were stuck in like a needle; nin alter katris, you were locked up like a shield; shaya, go down. And that is no problem of darkei hamori. But now we're going to start talking about things that Rav Chiya Ba'Oven says there is a problem of darkei hamori in doing, and therefore you're not allowed to do them. Although again, you have a girsa of the Ramach, one of the Rishonim, who says that actually these things are also not darkei hamori. We'll talk about that as we go on. Number one, ha'omer gadgdi, if a person says be mazaldik, my mazal, he's mazal mazali, Rashi says, he addresses his mazal, be mazaldik, be fortunate, usnukloi, and don't be tired, ashti uvushti, by day and by night. So that, yeshvim ishav darkei hamori, to say such a kind of thing is darkei hamori, it's superstitious, and you're not allowed to do it. Rabbi Yehuda says, never mind that it's superstitious. God ain't el loshen avodah zarah. The word God in this kind of context is actually a name of avodah zarah. So in other words, the person is not just doing darkei hamori a superstitious practice. He's actually invoking the name of an avodah zarah, which he'd be chayav for that. He'd be chayav for the issur of davening to avodah zarah. Shenema ha'orchem la God shulchan. As we find a pasuk where the navi criticizes people that set a table for God. So God is the name of an avodah zarah, and they set a table for it to invite it to their house, to their meal, or whatever. So therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda says, when a person says this lachash, God be, then he's actually invoking that avodah zarah God, and therefore it's also to do that.
Krishmashalamita, we use this word all the time.
We say God gedudu gedenu. They were talking about the shevet God. They were talking about the shevet God, and we're invoking Yaakov's bracha to him. There, we're not saying it as a matter of mazel. But here, where the person is invoking the mazel, so the Tanakama of the Braisa says that it's a matter of darkei hamori, that he's doing a superstitious practice, and Rabbi Yehuda says he's actually invoking a name of avodah zarah. But no, that has nothing to do with when we say God gedud yigudanu, which is we're referring to the Navi God and Yaakov's bracha to him. Okay, next. Hu bishma v'hi bishmai. If people had a superstitious practice where at night the husband and wife would switch names because of superstition. So that yeshman, mishum darkei hamori, there's a problem of darkei hamori in that. Another one, dunu donai. If a person says, "Be strong, my barrel," or his barrel's wine or whatever. Also, yeshman, mishum darkei hamori, then that's darkei hamori because that's a superstitious kind of spell that the emodium, another such going, would say in order that their barrels of wine should be strong and not break. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ain don el loshen avodah zarah. And again, Rabbi Yehuda says in this connection that the word don is actually a name of avodah zarah. And again, he's chayav for invoking and davening to an avodah zarah. Shenema, as you have a pasuk, kanishvoyim ba'ashmas tremen. The navi criticizes the people who swear by the guilt of Shomron, meaning the Avodah Zorah, and then Avodah Zorah and the Eglei HaZahav that they had in Shomron, and they say, as your God, Don, lives. So therefore, so in other words, so he's learning, in other words, that Don is an actual name of Avodah Zorah. So when he says, Dunu Donai, that Rabbi Yehuda sees in there the word Don, and it's saying he's actually invoking the Avodah Zorah Don. And Marsha says, in particular, we're talking about, we know that Yerovam set up the Eglei HaZahav at Beis Eilon in Don, and therefore the Avodah Zorah Don represents that the person is invoking, is trying to invoke the power of that Eglei HaZahav, which is awesome. Next. Ha'oimah la'orev tzrach, if a person says, this is another one of these brises from the Perek HaMeroyim, if a person says to a male raven, quo, because Rashi says, because the ravens supposedly bring news, good news or bad news. So he says to the raven, call, quo, to bring me news. Or he says to a female raven, screech, and turn your tail towards me that it should be for good. That also, Yeshman, Mishum Dauke Hermodi, that's also Dauke Hermodi, and you're not allowed to say such things. Another one, if a person says, shech this rooster, because it called out at night. Now we know roosters usually call out very early in the morning. So Rashi says two explanations. One is arvis means at night, so it means it's called out later than the other ones. Or different explanation. Rashi says not arvis, but ovis, that it sounded like a crow when it cackled this time. When it said cock-a-doodle-doo, it sounded more like a crow. So he's saying it's bad luck to have such a thing, and therefore shecht it. Or he says shecht this female chicken because it made a noise like a male. Then also yeshbem mishum davke hamori. Then there's a problem of davke hamori. In doing that, you're not allowed to do that. Now, here we have an interesting concept where Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid writes in his Savah that you should do that. That if you have a female chicken, not the first one about the male rooster, but if you have a female, a hen that makes a noise like a male, then you should shecht it. So what's going on over here? If the Gemara is saying over here, Darkei HaMori, how can Rabbi Yehuda say to do that? And the belt in fact does hold that. So one explanation is, so the Beit Yosef gives an explanation. We mentioned before that there's a Rishon called the Ramach, Ramosha Koyan, I think it stands for, who had a Girsa in the Gemara that all of these things are not Davke HaModi. Okay, so if it's not Davke HaModi, then you're allowed to do that. There's a number of other answers as well. The Maharil gives an answer that it's only also if you're saying that you're shechting it because it called out wrongly, because it called out like a male, like a rooster, instead of making the noise that a female, that a hen usually would make. But if you're just shechting it without saying why you're doing it, then there's no problem with that. You have an interesting concept that Rabbi Yosef Engel mentions in one of his Sfarim, Yoyone Ashas. He says that actually what it is you're not allowed to do these things when you're doing them because the Goyim did them. And again, like you're ascribing importance to what they did and saying, you know what, these guys knew what they're doing. Let's follow their ways. That would be also because you're showing them, you're giving importance to what they did. And again, as the Rambam says, when you give validity to those superstitions, then you're likely to get involved also with their other things such as their Avodah Zarah. But if you're doing it because a Chacham said to do it, then there's no problem. So he says, Abba, then, in that case, Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid knew people are commonly doing this, so he wanted to avoid that people shouldn't be doing the Avera of Darkei HaMori, so therefore he put it in his Tzavah, and now when people are doing it, they're not doing it because they're Moridim did it, they're doing it Abba, because Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid said to do it, so good, therefore it's Moser. Okay. Onward. Continues the Gemara. If a person says, Eshteva Oysir, I'm going to drink and I'm going to leave over some in the cup. Yes, then there's some Davke HaMori, then there's a problem with Davke HaMori in it. So again, now you're allowed to tell other people to leave over a little bit. but you're not allowed to say it for yourself, because when you're saying it to other people, then you're saying it as a bracha to them, and a bracha to people you're allowed to say, but just to yourself. Why you're not saying a bracha to yourself? So therefore, it's just nichush. Next, hamavakas based in bakosel. If a woman breaks eggs against the wall, so Rashi describes like this, that you have chicks have hatched out of the eggs. So she takes the eggs. She takes some of the eggs and breaks them against the wall as a michush that the other one should stay alive. Or Rashi brings another girsa, not mevakas, mekabas, meaning that she nails them. After the chicks have hatched out of the eggs, she takes the eggshells that are left and nails them up to the wall as a superstitious practice that the chicks shouldn't die. She smears them on the wall in front of the chicks. Yes, but Mishum Dauke Havardi, there's no problem Dauke Havardi with it, and you're not allowed to do that. Next, the Amegas Bifnei Afrosim. Also, if she stirs a pot in front of the chicks for the same reason, as a superstitious thing that they shouldn't die, then also Yes, Mishum Dauke Havardi. Another one, Hamarak Kedas Lakotach. When a woman dances when she's making kutach, so kutach is a dish that they use in the times of the Gemara. It's mentioned in many places in Shas. We talked about it in Brachos, among other things. It involves sour. There's various recipes of it, but one recipe that they had in the times of the Gemara, kutach habavli, involved sour milk, salt, and bread, and then moldy breadcrumbs. Anyway, so there was a goyish concept in those days that if you dance while you're making it, then it'll make the kutach stronger. So if a person does that, then or v'hamashatetet la'adoshim, or if when she's cooking lentils, she tells people to be quiet, v'hamashavachas v'grisin, or vice versa, when she's cooking split peas, she tells people to yell, or she herself yells, and all of those things are supposed to make them cook better. So also, yeshva v'shem davke hamodi, all of those is an issue of davke hamodi, because all of those are superstitious practices where there's no logical reason to them, there's no validity to them, and you're not allowed to do them. Next, also hamarak kedes, also when a woman dances, if a woman urinates in front of her pot in order that it should cook quickly, also yes, there's also a problem of Dauke Hamodi with that. You're not allowed to do that. But there is something you can do in order to make the food cook faster. Avol noisin kesem shel tus, but you're allowed to put a piece of wood from a tus tree, which is a mulberry tree. Rashi explains that wood has a very sharp, has a sharpness there. It's sharp like vinegar. And therefore it helps the food to cook faster. So you're allowed to put that into the pot to make it cook faster. That's not nichush because it has an actual benefit that you can demonstrate. And also the shivrei tzchuchis, you're also allowed to put broken pieces of glass into the pot, so to say, the kadeva, in the pot, the shvilsa shizbasha mehera, in order that it should cook quicker. That's not considered nichush, because there you can actually show that it, there you can show naturally that it has a natural effect. Okay, fine. As far as Darkei HaModi, you're right. You're allowed, from the point of view of Darkei HaModi, sure, you're allowed to do it. But from the point of view of Sakana, you're not allowed to put glass into your pot, because you might end up swallowing the glass by accident. Okay. Next, continues the Gemara. Again, these are brises quoted from this perek from these two prokim in the Tesefta of Shabbos that talk about various things that are Darkei Hamodi. And by the way, there is also an explanation that some of the Rishonim have. I think the Rashba mentions this as a possibility in his Tshuva, that maybe only these things that we're mentioning in the Gemara are also as Darkei Hamodi, but maybe other kinds of practices, even if they don't seem to have a natural explanation, maybe you would in fact be allowed to do them. And only the ones that I'm mentioning over here would be also as Darkei Hamodi. Interesting, by the way, worth mentioning in connection with Lag BaOmer, one of the first brises in those prakim of Tosefta mentions something about dancing by a fire that is Darkei Hamodi, and I've seen people ask in that case, then what does that mean as far as us dancing by a fire on Lag BaOmer? And one answer is that that's not what the Braita doesn't mean, just dancing by a fire. There's no problem with that. We're talking about similar to what we're saying over here in the Gemara, where the person dances as a magical thing that they're doing in order to make the fire burn better. That would be Dauke Hemer. But we're not, when we dance by the fire, unlike Weimer, we're not dancing in order to make it burn better. We're dancing in honor of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and therefore there's no problem with that. So just worth mentioning to show how sometimes you have people that learn something very superficially, and it brings them to kashas, and if they were to learn it more carefully, then they would realize there's no kasha. Okay. Part of our bottom, we learn in a braisa, since we're mentioning natural kinds of things that you're allowed to do, even though on the face of it they seem like magical things, but they actually have a natural, demonstrable benefit, therefore you're allowed to do them. So the braisa says, part of our bottom, you're allowed to put a chunk of salt into a lamp, in order that it should burn better, more clearly, because that actually has, it actually explains, the salt helps make the oil clearer, and when it's clearer, it burns better. So you're allowed to do that. The noisin tik the chaus is tachas aner b'shrosha tamtin b'tablik. You're also allowed to put clay or ground up brick or ground up earthenware under the lamp in order that it should burn more slowly, and that way it'll last longer, because those things cool off the lamp, and when the lamp is cooler, then it burns slower, and therefore the light lasts longer. So you're allowed to do that. Omer Rav Zutra. So in this connection, Rav Zutra mentions, by the way, Hai man de mechasi shraga de mishcha, if a person covers up an oil lamp, where therefore what happens is that now the oil in it gets heated up faster, because now you have more of the heat is retained, therefore the oil is going to burn faster. Umagali nefta, or if he has a lamp that's burning neft, which we learned back in the second paragraph, is naphtha or kerosene or something like that, which is very, very volatile, very flammable. And therefore, if you uncover it, then the flame gets to the reservoir of naphtha, of neft faster, and therefore it burns faster. So such things, ka'ava mishum bal tashchis, the person is over on bal tashchis for doing that, because he's wasting the oil or he's wasting the neft and causing them to burn faster unnecessarily. One more, the Gemara says, one more thing as far as Dauke HaMori, something which is not Dauke HaMori, that is, Cham Rav Chayim, Pum Rabbanan, if a person says, and when they're saying L'chayim, wine and light to the mouth of the Chachamim, Ein Ben Mishum Dauke HaMori. There's no problem of Dauke HaMori with that, because it's not a lachash, it's not some kind of magical or superstitious or whatever thing that you're saying. You're saying it as a bracha to the Chachamim. For the same reason as we say l'chayim. In fact, ma'aseh b'Rabbi Akiva sha'asa mishta l'bnei. It happened as Rabbi Akiva that he made a party for his son. Mishta in Gemara terminology usually means a wedding party. So he was marrying off his son. The alcohol kos for kos shehedi, for every cup of wine that he brought, Omar, he would say cham rabachayev, his toast, his l'chayim was cham rabachayev kum rabbanon, wine and life to the mouth of the rabbanon. Light and wine to the mouth of their Rabbanon and to the mouth of their Talmidim. So why Taka is he saying, why is he saying the Nusach like that? When in particular, why is he mentioning wine first the first time around and at the end the second time around? And why the second time is he mentioning Talmidim and not the first time? So Maharsha explains like this. We know that when a person drinks wine, it can accomplish good things. It can make him besimcha, or if he drinks too much, it can cause problems. So the Akiva is saying to the Rabbanan, Chamra b'chayil, if you drink the proper amount of wine, then it'll bring you life. And then he's giving them a bracha, okay, but even if it happens that you drink a little more than you should, nevertheless, though, you should still have life. It shouldn't have a bad effect on you. Then to the Talmidim, he addresses himself. Then he addresses himself to the Talmidim. He says, you Talmidim, you tend to drink more wine than you're supposed to, because young people usually have a hard time, younger people usually have a hard time keeping things within reasonable limits. So you also, therefore, so he's wishing them, and benching them that they should have life and wine to their mouth, to the Rabbanon, and their Talmidim. In other words, that even if you end up drinking more than you should, that you should also have life, even if you end up drinking more wine than you should. So that's one point. There's another point also that there's another point that another explanation of Sefer called Nakos Yasser gives an explanation. He says that Rabbanon are paskening halacha, and we know that you're not allowed to paskin halacha when you're drunk. Whereas the Talmidim Adraba, we have a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions that you give the Talmidim wine, and therefore it stimulates them to say new divrei Torah. So by them, you want to bench them that they have life and they have lots of wine in their life in order that they should be able to say more divrei Torah. Hadron halacha b'meisha. Time for questions now, if anybody has.
Shkoyach, Rabbi. Shkoyach.